Okay, each group is autonomous. This is the next tradition. Except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Except in matters affecting that group. And if somebody is affecting our ability to carry the message to fulfill AA's primary purpose at a meeting by disrupting the meeting, we had a famous one in my group in New York, and he was regularly escorted out of the room. He finally got sober. It took him about 10 years. But he finally did. But he'd start screaming and cursing and using bad language, and we couldn't carry on the meeting. Now, that's not fair to everybody else. One individual, it's our common welfare that comes first, not my individual welfare. My individual welfare is part of the common welfare. There is no governing body. These traditions are not enforced. We hope they are embraced. As Bill said, the traditions represent our common consent to conform and to be willing to make sacrifices for the good of the whole. This is what's important, the whole, the common welfare. This has to come first. Yes. If a group is not following the traditions and calling itself an AA group, what happens to it? Does the DCM go talk to it? Does the delegate go talk to it? I would hope so. It certainly is something that should be try to be handled locally. We are not a government for AA in the General Service Office in New York. We're not a legislative office. We don't open groups. We don't close groups. In recent years, I think I'm right about this. These things have changed, and I've been gone 10 years, so I don't know exactly how it's done now, but I believe that the list of groups and the GCRs and all that kind of thing are sent in by the delegate. Every now and then we get I'm told, and this certainly happened when I was there, we would get something from a group that was not on the list. Our tendency in the past had always been to respect the individual AA group. So then we would talk to the delegate on the phone and say, well, this group is, sent in a registration with its GCR, GSR, and all that kind of thing. What about it? And then he'd say what he had to say. We were between a rock and a hard place. Well, to list the group according to what the group said or according to what the delegate said. I think I'm saying right about this now. I don't know what's done now. But did I answer your question? We don't kick a group out. Yes.
I'm Robert Barris. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Robert.
And I'm going to have some input into this only because I was fortunate enough, privileged enough to serve at General Service Conference the last two conferences. And several of these issues that we've talked about today are being addressed and are very much of concern in Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole. The group registration thing has been changed as of right now with the, quote, new computer that we bought.
God help it. It's not doing right yet.
That's a whole other thing that, but the way it stands now, if you start a new group, forms are in the process of being developed, so you may get caught in the interim and this kind of thing. But the way it will be is your group decides to become a group. You send your information to the General Service Office. The General Service Office enters it in the computer and puts it on hold. It's not entered as a group yet. What happens is they send that information back to the area structure. then get the DCM or the appropriate people to go and visit with that group's GSR. Our primary purpose in that is to eliminate groups from the directory who are not groups. Groups that are not Alcoholics Anonymous groups. We've got everything in the sun listed in there that think they're groups of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they're not. If nothing happens, if nobody sends any information in 30 days, it's automatically listed as a group. If the group decides after visiting with the DCM and talking about it, that, hey, we're not really an AA group, we want to be a meeting, or we're not really an AA group, we're some other kind of group, then they send that information to the General Service Office saying, we decide we don't want to be listed, and it's dropped from the listing. This thing of dual addiction was addressed at the General Service Conference this year. It's so much so on the mind of everyone in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's one of our big deals right now, and there are no big deals, but it is close to a big deal. That the theme of the General Service Conference next year is going to be sponsorship, back to basics. Never read. All right. Never read a General Service Conference report, especially the one next year, is going to be fantastic. One of the topics of discussion, I know Cora has been to these things, and her one of them is going to be on the way we introduce ourselves in Alcoholics Anonymous, keeping Alcoholics Anonymous Alcoholics Anonymous. The general consensus that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful, in the sentence, period. Whatever else is that I'm affected with really doesn't matter. You know, we need to get back to basics in order to keep Alcoholics Anonymous Alcoholics Anonymous. And if I'm addicted to toothpicks, it just isn't making sense.
Thank you for explaining that about how they register groups now, because I wasn't aware of the...
That's brand new.
Well, it sounds like it might work. We hope. Excuse me. Yes. Yes, Lucy. Well, I mean, dually addicted people are eligible for membership. They're alcoholics and drug addicts. So, I mean, that's not a problem. Alcoholics and drug addicts. We just can't have drug addicts with no alcohol problem. And then I would like to close this out, because this can, let me tell you. I was conference secretary one year, and we had this as a topic for a night meeting. The meeting began at 7:30. We left that room at 2 a.m. with no decision having been made. No decision. Now, this can go on forever, really. I want to tell you what happened in the group I belong to in Leland, right over here. It's a small group. This one woman came, and she never said she was an alcoholic. She said she took prescription drugs. And she came maybe 9 or 10 times, and we'd pass around, you know, and she never said a word. They'd get to her, she'd say her name, and she'd pass. And somebody called me up and said, what are you doing about her? She's not supposed to be there. I said, well, she's not really causing any trouble. She's not keeping us from carrying the message. It's not like we had 6 people in there talking about nothing but drugs, so we couldn't talk about booze. After 9 or 10 times, she didn't come back. Now, this is nothing I'm saying is official. Nothing, nothing, nothing. This is strictly my own opinion. If you belong to a little group, somebody comes in there and keeps their mouth shut, and they're not bothering anybody, I don't see a need to make a big deal of it. It's going to go away. It will go away, I think. Now, that's a different matter from, you know, mixing the two things up. We can't get married. We can't even get engaged. You know, we just can't. Dual addiction, yes. Do we still, on the same subject, y'all?
No.
Okay.
Four.
All right.
We are on 4.
All right, we're ready for 4. Every AA group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. All right. She said there was, when they started their young people's group, there was a lot of confusion between a designated group and a chartered group. I'd never heard of the distinction. That must be local. Yeah, that must be a local, form of description. I've never heard of it. Okay. Anybody else on group autonomy?
I picked this up out of that AA group that was pretty good explaining stuff. And when I first started coming out here and filling up, I didn't really understand that. I couldn't really read that good. I've got some learning disabilities in my mind while I'm unfogged and stuff. Language of the Heart is a real good book. That explains a lot of that. What about the autonomy of the group? Some groups are wondering if their business meetings are public. Or can we buy water or pinball machines? I know you're not speaking for, you couldn't, never mind. One opinion, I guess, from your own.
He wants to know, we're talking about group autonomy. Can the group buy water or pinball machines? You must own the property where you meet if you could install a machine. See, most groups just pay rent where they meet, and they could not use any kind of permanent installation because they rent the place. And water, coffee, Coke, whatever it is you want to bring to your meetings, of course, you're free to do. Every group can do what it pleases, except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Now, when things affect other groups or AA as a whole, the General Service Office, the General Service Conference, and the General Service Board have no authority to do anything about it. The office would fulfill whatever the conference and the board told us to do. I mean, if they took an action, then we would answer letters that came in terms of the actions that had been taken by the board and the conference. We would do that. But this would be considered AA sharing. And we would say, the conference suggests that. And it's always suggests that. The 12 steps are suggested. Nobody can make anybody do anything. That's why none of this is imposed from without. Most groups are willing to accept this kind of thing for the good of AA as a whole and therefore for the good of their own sobriety. Now, I'll share one example with you of something that was affecting AA as a whole. And we were not able to do anything about it in the office. And I almost got into trouble on this when I was working in the office. I had a hard time keeping quiet on this subject. There was a time when all AA groups in the South were segregated. And word of this got out all over the country, of course. And many blistering attacks were made on AA as a spiritual organization for not taking a stand on this. And it was very hard for me not to take a stand. And I did get into it one time with the delegate from Mississippi. And the boss had to remind me that my employment had been contingent on my ability to keep my mouth shut. So I had to stop telling them, this is all changed. It took a long time to change. But AA does reflect the society in which it exists. It just does. It reflects, it reflects the customs. Now, this was something that was giving AA a black eye. But this is just no longer true. Now, for instance, another way that this kind of thing can happen. They say all you need is a resentment and a coffee pot to start a new group. Okay, you got a resentment and a coffee pot, you start a new group. But don't have it on the same night and at the same time as the group you just left. This affects that group. I mean, have it at a different time. Have your other meeting. But if you have it at the same time that the other group meets in the same town, then this is competition, and we're not in competition in AA. This is the kind of thing that comes up. Yes. Not for too long. We do what we can. That's all. Okay. Five. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Everything we do in AA, every conference, every board meeting, every committee, every piece of literature, every talk, everything that happens in AA happens to help us carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. We're always looking for more and better ways to do this, to reach alcoholics who still suffer. Our primary purpose, number one. And that's why the traditions represent our common consent to conform and the need for survival. But we don't want to just survive. We want to grow because we want to carry the message. Anything that interferes with our ability to carry the message is something we need to deal with. Doesn't have to become a problem, but we do need to look at it and try to deal with it. Anything on carrying the message? Here we go. Every AA group, an AA group, ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise. Those problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. We have over 15 pamphlets written devoted to this subject. This is as much of a controversy, and it's gone on just as long as who is a member of AA. There's not a single conference that comes along that this doesn't come up in one way or another about affiliating or even seeming to affiliate with some other organization. Now, it would be a whole meeting of 2 hours to discuss all the things that could be discussed about it. I would suggest that you read what Bill has written in here on that subject about all the things that they tried in the early days, about the ones who bought the building and they were going to have the hospital on the top floor and the rehab on the next floor and the offices on the next floor and the first floor was going to be for AA meetings and so on. What happens to that? The guy who hires himself out as an AA counselor for industry. They wanted Bill to take a job at Towns Hospital, and at this point Bill didn't have two nickels. Lois was working in a department store, and they were living at the 24th Street Clubhouse. They wanted him to take a job as the AA counselor at Towns Hospital. He wanted to take it. The group didn't let him. The group conscience prevailed. It was always having to prevail with Bill. Somebody asked him one time how he came to write the 12 traditions. He said, to protect the fellowship from me. But it protects us from ourselves. It protects us from each other. It's what the traditions do. Yes?
I have a question before it goes along. I'll have to explain it really hard to make sure I explain it.
You want to come up here and talk into the mic then so they can hear it and so he can get it on tape?
Let's see. All right, I was wondering, my basic question is, I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I work with people outside of Alcoholics Anonymous, I am not necessarily a representative of Alcoholics Anonymous. So therefore, how do I handle myself in that situation? And my particular problem is we've got a resentment in Big Book and a coffee pot, and we're forming another young people's group in Jackson, and I've kind of got a question that goes along the line is, if I go and talk to them as a concerned person and not a... See, I am a member of my group, but I'm not a spokesman for my group. If I go and talk to them and express my feelings, is it necessarily my responsibility to get across the fact to them that this is not necessarily the way our group feels?
Mm-hmm. You all heard that, and you got it, Robert. We all say we speak for ourselves, not for our own group, not for AA as a whole, and that goes for me too. I certainly do not speak for my group or for AA as a whole. I don't speak for the General Service Office. I use examples of things that happen there simply to try to illustrate points. But I have no authority to speak for anybody except myself, based on my own experience. But when you work as a counselor in an alcoholism facility, you are not an AA counselor. You're an alcoholism counselor. AAs don't counsel, they share. We do not share. This is not understood. I mean, it is not understood at all. People here in Greenville do not know the difference between AA and what goes on at the Noonan Center or what goes on at Delta Medical Center and those things. They think we're all one and the same thing. They don't know the difference between AA and the National Council on Alcoholism. It's up to us not to go out and preach on these things, but when we have a chance to try to clarify these things. We're not experts, we don't counsel, and we don't run facilities of any kind. Yes?
I was wondering about conferences, if we have to be at a conference right now. The committee that got a conference on I've never seen any AA literature written about a committee to form a conference.
He's never seen any literature about a committee to form a conference. There's a guideline on conferences and conventions, and you'll see it all discussed in there. We have about, 12? Mm-hmm. Guidelines on every. You look on the literature order form, and you'll see them listed. And there is one on conferences and conventions. There's one on clubs, too. It's not always read by people who start clubs, but there is one. Okay.
Don't you think that's why our service, committees like DI and CCC are so important, and that's why we go out there and try to explain to the public what Alcoholics Anonymous is and isn't?
Exactly. It's extremely important that we explain as much what we're not as what we are. Okay, can we go on? Because there are a couple of important things I want to get to. I don't want to take too long. Yes? Kim? You're carrying the message. If you hold a meeting at a treatment facility at their request, are you breaking a tradition? No. We go to prisons, we go to hospitals, we go to treatment facilities, we go anywhere we're asked to go to carry the message. An AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. if there is any other outfit in the whole cotton-picking universe that declines outside contributions, I'd like to know what it is. I've never heard of it. This is a story that needs to be told. I don't know why we don't get the, why some PI committee does not write a really significant piece and get it published in a national magazine on this subject. It's unique. Nobody can believe it. When this Hughes business bill was first passed and they started forming all these things, you can imagine what our office was like. It was like Rockland County and Rockland Hospital on full moon night. People would come in every minute and they would want us to tell them how to start their programs, but we didn't know anything about that, and we had to tell them that we didn't. All we knew about was AA. Well, then they would want to know how we were funded. And I would say, well, through contributions and through the sale of literature. No, no, who pays for this office? Contributions and the sale of literature. Well, are you salaried? Yes. Who pays your salary? Contributions and the sale of literature. You get anything from the city? No. You get anything from the state? No. Anything from the federal government? No. That's impossible, he said. I said, but it works. Nobody believes, but it works. I was on an important church committee in New York, and oh Lord, we were always having so much trouble about the steeples falling down and needing new steps and all this. And I remember saying to the bishop one time, you know, it might not hurt if you all took a page out of our book. What is that, he said. I said, Alcoholics Anonymous. Oh, that's a nice little outfit, he said. I said, not a nice little outfit. I said, we have a yearly budget of well over $1 million a year. It's about $2 million now, isn't it?
We're over five.
Well, when I left, it was two. Well, $5 million a year. I said, that's not a nice little outfit. We don't own any property. We don't have any fundraising drives. We don't accept any money from outside. And we put a limit on the amount our own members can give. And we have no money problems. Couldn't understand. Peculiar people. Now, you know, we owe this tradition to Mr. John D. Rockefeller. And the account of that is in this book, AA Comes of Age. And it's really very interesting. Bill busted his, you know what, trying to get this meeting together with Mr. Rockefeller and all his billionaire friends in New York. And they were going to raise a lot of money and publish the book and build their treatment facilities and do all that with all this money. Bill got up and made his talk, and Mr. Rockefeller responded and said, money will ruin this thing. And Bill's hopes sank. And it did us a favor, because money would have ruined us, as it did these people I was telling you about overseas who had this money. You know, we just don't really need to accumulate too much money in the groups or anyplace else. Speaking on this subject, about groups being fully self-supporting, switchboard lady called me and said there was a young man out there who wanted to buy literature, and would I talk to him?
This is the end of side one. Please turn your cassette at this time and continue playing. Thank you.
And he belonged to something that was called the Yes Group in New York, that's young people enjoying sobriety. And he wanted to buy literature for his group and wanted me to suggest what it should be. And I happened to know something about it because his group met at the church where my husband was on the staff. And I knew they'd had a terribly hard time paying the, you know, the rent. And we do think that we should pay for, you know, using people's facilities. And I knew they were as hard up as they could be. And I said, let us make you a gift of some literature for right now. And I said, then after you get strong and you have a lot of members, you can make a contribution. Don't worry about it. We'll be glad to do it. He said, no, ma'am. Our group conscience meeting decided that we would give up coffee, but we wanted to pay for our own literature. I almost cried. I thought it was wonderful. Just marvelous. But he knew what this was about. He really understood it. Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. I was one of those at one time. I'm going to combine two. AA as such would never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. The General Service Board is the custodian of our steps and our traditions. The General Service Conference shares that responsibility and is our deliberative and policy-making body. The General Service Office fulfills and executes the decisions made by the board and the conference. The board, the conference, and the office are all service bodies, not a government for AA. We make no decisions, we execute no legislative functions whatever. We are all service bodies, and we are all directly responsible to you, who are the people we serve. You elect your GSR. Your GSR participates in the assembly, which elects your delegate, which comes to the conference to represent your area along with the 90 other delegates, the directors of AA World Services, the directors of the AA Grapevine Incorporated, and the General Service Board and Conference and the office. We all meet together. You can only be a part of this if you participate in your own service structure. If your own delegate knows what it is that you're interested in, what you need, what you want him to bring to the conference for you. If there's a subject you need to have discussed, he needs to know what that is so he can send it to New York and see if it can get on some agenda, some committee, or something somewhere so that it can receive attention. Do you have a question?
Yeah, I have a question for about the money.
Yes.
Is it possible to give when they pass the basket,
what happens when they just dump a whole lot of money?
Is that
what happens? We're back to the money question. What happens when people throw huge amounts of money, $100 bills and things, into the collection plate? I belonged to what was known as the Silk Stocking Mink Coat Group in New York. We had more quarters than we had $100 bills. I never saw a $100 bill. Never. If there were a $100 bill, I'm sure that people would pay attention to this and try to find out something about it. If somebody's throwing $100 bills in there, they're drunk. I can't believe anybody sober's throwing $100 bills in the plate. She wants to know about that there is a limit on the amount of money AAs can give in a year, which is $500. She wants to know, what if somebody dies and leaves a trust to AA for $500 a year? Can it be accepted? It can't. We can accept $500 once, not in perpetuity. Now, hundreds of thousands of dollars have been left to AA in wills over the years. Hundreds of thousands of dollars have been contributed to AA, which we have had to return. If an AA dies and his friends begin sending in contributions, if they don't say they're members, and if we don't know, we have to write a letter and ask them if they're members of AA. And if they're not, we have to return the contribution with thanks and with an explanation that we do not wish to be ungracious, unappreciative, but that we do accept no money from the outside because it's important for the previously irresponsible to become entirely responsible for their own affairs. Now, we don't want anybody to have a vested interest in AA, and there's some rich people who are in AA. One of them, I happen to know, was involved in giving a treatment facility, and he fired someone who was on the staff. And he said he believed in the golden rule. Those that have the gold rule. We don't want that in AA. Nobody rules. Yes. She wants to know if the General Service Office needs to know how much money you take in. The answer is no. There's a pamphlet. What's it called now?
It's been rewritten on the Supporting Yourself Support System.
Called Supporting Yourself Support System. They've changed the name so often I can't remember. But they do suggest that a certain percentage of what you take in goes to your area assembly. A certain percentage goes to your local intergroup office, if you happen to have one, and a certain percentage would go to the AA General Service Office, if you have it. But nobody asks any questions about whether you're given anything or not, as far as that goes. We're going to get to that. We're not there yet. Okay. Self-supporting means we pay rent for the property that we use.
So it must be money?
Anything in kind. We don't accept contributions in kind. If somebody wants to give you an air conditioning unit or furniture, that would be... Huh?
None of them want to give you for a dollar, man. You know it's an outside contribution.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I know. That's up to your group conscience.
What about other groups donating from group to group? It says,
well, that's okay.
Is that
in group to group, sure. It's not outside. Okay. Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. Now, this is one of the ones that blew my husband's mind. During the years that I worked in the office, and all this business was going on in Washington about, you know, treatment facility money, and they were starting treatment facilities, and they were doing this, that, and the other, and they were starting it in the armed forces, and Lord, 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 it was busy going on. I thought, suppose we had been involved in this. Suppose we'd been down in Washington trying to influence legislation. Suppose we had been involved in trying to start these treatment facilities or tell them what to do and so on. We would not have had time to do our own thing, even if we'd stayed out of controversy, which was impossible. There had been plenty of controversy as it is, has it not? Plenty of controversy as it is. But if we had really been involved in this, it would have just been impossible. Now, someone mentioned the Washingtonians earlier. The Washingtonians were a group that came about before the Civil War, and they had like 500,000 members sober. And it really looked like they might succeed. And they got thrown by two things, both issues. One, you might say, was related. They got involved in the wet and dry issue. You know, temperance, so on. And they got involved in the Civil War dispute, the two things. And within a period of 10 years, they had vanished altogether. Now, this is written up briefly in AA Comes of Age. Milton Maxwell, who was the non-alcoholic chairman of our board a number of years ago, and a well-known sociologist and specialist in the field of alcoholism, wrote a long paper. He did a complete study of the Washingtonian movement, and it is available. If anyone would like to read it, you can write to the office, and they will send you a copy of it, and it's very interesting. I will share one experience that I had. I got a telephone call one day from a radio station, and the big headline news then was teenage alcoholism. And this man from the radio station wanted to know what our opinion was about teenage alcoholism. And I explained that he was talking to the AA General Service Office and that we didn't have an opinion on teenage alcoholism, that we had a program for recovery from alcoholism, and that it seemed to work pretty well for people of any age. And he said, well, you must have an opinion on what's the best treatment. And I said, well, naturally, I would think AA is the best way, that we have a program, and we are glad to carry the message to anyone who wants to receive it. Well, he said, do you have children? I said, yes. He said, are they teenagers? I said, yes. He said, what would you want to do if your children were having a problem with drinking? I said, look, you are talking to me as a member of the staff of the AA General Service Office, and I'm going to tell you what we do here at the AA General Service Office. If you want to talk to me about what I would do about my own children, you call me at home tonight, and I'll be glad to tell you, but that's not what I talk about when I'm here. He said, you mind if I play this on the radio? I said, well, I don't know. Play it back to me and let me hear what I said. So he played it back to me, and I said, okay. I didn't think I'd said anything that would cause any trouble. 2 or 3 days later, the boss came in, and he was laughing. He said, I had recently been on a trip to California. He said, one of your friends from California heard you on the radio. I said, well, I didn't give my name. He said, she doesn't have to give her name. A lot of people recognize her voice. We know who it was. And she didn't even tell him about the big book. Now, I was trying to avoid controversy, not get into a lot of things. And he gets mad because I don't tell him about the big book. You know, and there's one other thing I did want. One other thing I did want to share with you all about power in AA. This really has to do with the group conscience, and it has to do with service center employing special workers. When I decided to go to work at the General Service Office, I was employed by a large family service agency in New York. And I had a hard time making up my mind to go to work for AA. I'd been an active member of a group, and I thought maybe that's how I wanted to keep it. But it had come up a number of times, maybe 4 other times, about would I be interested. So finally I decided that this must be in my destiny. And I'm so glad I did decide that, because it was, and it was wonderful. I loved it. I had problems from time to time, but I loved it. And I told the woman that I was working for there that I was going in. She asked me to describe what I was doing, and I told her that, well, the first assignment would be on institutions. And she said, first assignment? I said, yes, you keep an assignment 2 years, then you move on to something else. She said, well, that's administratively unsound. I said, well, they don't seem to think so, and they've been doing it a long time. Years later, after I was working there, I had this woman who was a psychologist was coming to have lunch with me. And I asked her to come early and go to the group, to the office AA meeting. Before I came, this was after I came to work, they already had the AA group going when I came to work. They had started it because the staff was fighting so bad at one time, they thought if they had an AA meeting, it might help matters. It did. At any rate, I asked her if she could stay, come to our AA meeting. Whenever we had a visitor, we declared it an open meeting. So she came. I showed her around the office and told her what everybody did. And she said, everything here is opposite from power, is against power. It's set up so that it can't happen. I said, that's right. The only way to get a raise in salary is just to stick around. Just stick around. That's every 2 years we change jobs. And it's very important. It keeps the assignment green. Keeps it from getting stale. It keeps it from bearing the stamp of one person. I hated to give up my assignments. And always the first 2 weeks after rotation, I spent more time in the room with the girl who had my old assignment than I did with my new one. I wanted to make sure they did it right. They did it fine. All right, now we come to anonymity. And I'm going to do the two as one. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, TV, and films. Anonymity is a spiritual foundation for all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. There's just no subject about which there has been more misunderstanding, maybe inside as well as outside of AA. The anonymity tradition is very clearly stated. You break the anonymity tradition if you breach your anonymity at the level of press, radio, TV, and film. Anything else is at your own discretion. Anything else. Press, radio, TV, and film. Now, I break my anonymity if I tell my mother I'm in AA. If I tell my children, if I tell my husband. I only break the anonymity tradition if I break it at the level that is mentioned in the 11th tradition. Now, there are groups and members that are so anonymous they don't know each other's last names. And it's very hard for them to communicate with each other. And that there are others who go so far the other way they want to shout it from the housetops. And we hope that we, most of us, are going to be somewhere in the middle. Not ridiculously private and not ridiculously outspoken. But we have to respect both opinions. I mean, the one who wants to tell nobody and the one who wants to tell everybody, that's their business, provided they don't do it at the level of press, radio, TV, and film. Now, every now and then you'll see an AA member who will appear on television. It'll be a program about alcoholism. They will talk about alcoholism. They may even talk about their own alcoholism. If they don't say they are a member of AA, they have not broken the anonymity tradition. If you don't say you're a member of AA, you have not broken the anonymity tradition. Now, the reason for this is that the important thing about us is the message, not the messenger. It's what we have to say, not who says it. I mean, a big, important movie star, a political person, is no more a spokesman for AA than any one of us. And frequently, the ones who get us into the most trouble are not our most reliable members. They're the ones who talk the loudest and give out the most misinformation. So this is the kind of thing that we want to guard against. Now, the 12th tradition, yes, Jack.
I remember when Senator Eagleton, you know, it came out that he was alcoholic. I know that there are several new people that are a member of AA. Now, even though he didn't break the tradition, it's general information, general public knowledge that he was a member of AA. Now, I can see situations where, like, a politician could, to salvage his credibility or whatever he thinks, could say, I'm a member of AA and we believe we ought to outlaw whiskey or whatever. Now, that's breaking the tradition. Has AA ever had to take legal steps to stop somebody from doing something?
We can't take any legal steps, but we've done everything but stand on our heads and walk on Fifth Avenue to try to get some of them not to do it.
Do you ever issue a disclaimer?
No. Nothing. We do nothing in public. But we've had private correspondence with a number of them who do it. Now, any time one does this, they'll give you all sorts of reasons why they're doing it. They're doing it because they want to get elected, and they're using it for their own personal ends. And that's human. But there are sacrifices involved here, and I'm about to read you one. And I don't think we ever need to say another word on this subject after you hear this. And I may cry while I read it, but you'll forgive me. In 1954, Yale University offered Bill an honorary degree of Doctor of Laws. The final paragraph of the proposed citation was to read, "We take pride in honoring this great anonymous assembly of men and women by conferring upon you worthy representative of this high purpose, the degree of Doctor of Laws, admitting to you all its rights and privileges. Bill's reply, in part, read as follows. It is only after most careful consultation with friends and with my conscience that I now feel obligated to decline such a mark of distinction as the degree of Doctor of Laws. Were I to accept the near-term benefits to Alcoholics Anonymous and to legions who still suffer, would no doubt be greatly, would no doubt be worldwide and considerable. I am sure that such a potent endorsement would greatly hasten public approval of AA everywhere. Therefore, none but the most compelling of reasons could prompt my decision to deny Alcoholics Anonymous an opportunity of this dimension. Now, this is the reason. The traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous, our only means of self-government, entreat each member to avoid all that kind of personal publicity or distinction that might link his name with our society in the general public mind. AA's 12th tradition reads as follows. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Because we have already had much practical experience with this vital principle, it is today the view of every thoughtful AA member that if over the years ahead we practice this anonymity absolutely, it will guarantee our effectiveness and unity by heavily restraining those to whom public honors and distinctions are but the natural stepping stones to dominance and personal power. Thus, the splendid citation which you propose describes me as WW and does protect my anonymity for the time being. Nevertheless, it would surely appear in the later historical record that I had taken an LLD. The public would then know the fact. So while I might accept the degree within the letter of AA's tradition as of today, I would surely be setting the stage for a violation of its spirit tomorrow. This would be, I am certain, a perilous precedent to set. The reply from the president of the Yale Corporation read, "The entire committee begged me to tell you in as genuine a way as I can how very deeply they appreciate your considering this invitation as thoroughly and unselfishly as you have. We understand completely your feelings in the matter, and we only wish there was some way that we could show you our deep sense of respect for you and for AA. Someday the opportunity will surely come." End of meeting. Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.